left here with a band called the Rotary Connection, and we went straight to London on the first star.
That's Little Sammy. And if you heard our last show, then you'll know that he's an Australian vocalist who fronted some really swingin' soul bands in the 60s, but decided to move to Europe at the end of the decade to try his luck there.
We did an audition for the musical director for Tom Jones, a friend that I hooked up with, a guy called Danny Secunda, who was the manager for Head, Hands and Feet. And he was a dear mate of mine, Danny, and he hooked up a meeting with Tom Jones, as musical director, to have a listen to us, and we went down and played one afternoon at the Revolution, and after it he wasn't impressed at all with the band, but not sounding egotistical, he said, I'll do something with the singer, but forget about the band. So Danny then got me to get another three good players, and I started to play in England. I started to play in London.
And that was the first in a series of breaks that led to 12 years overseas, 8 hit records, singing at Mick Jagger's wedding, touring with the Rolling Stones, hanging out with Jimi Hendrix, recording with Vangelis, making movies with Brigitte Bardot, and, would you believe, still much, much more. This is Rare Collections with David and Geordie Kilby, and welcome to part 2 of our look at the soul of Little Sammy Gahar. Yep, this time the focus is on the records that he made while he was based in Europe. France, for the most part, as that was where he enjoyed most of his success. And while Sammy left Australia because he struggled to find an audience for his unique sound, he quickly found plenty of appreciative ears overseas. And when you listen to some of the tracks we've got for this show, it's hard to imagine Sammy cutting anything like them had he stayed in Australia. He made mind-bending rock and roll, fronted jazz big bands, and also laid down some seriously funky soul music, tracks that are still winning him new fans in Europe today. If this is the first time you've come across him, then you're in for a treat. With a bag of great tracks to play and some cool stories to go along with them. Stick around. After doing some gigs in London at the dawn of the 70s, he was offered a chance to join Bluebeard. And they had enjoyed some success in France, and it seemed like a really good opportunity for Sammy, so he grabbed it. They cut a single, and there was also an LP, but sadly they weren't together for too long. As we mentioned in part one, Bluebeard were the band for Mick Jagger's wedding. The party went for 3 days. And the conversation between Mick and Sammy as the party was coming to an end was one of the reasons for their parting ways.
With his mother, he had his arm around his mother. He came up and I was standing with my drummer, a guy called Hank Meerbeck, and Mick came up and he said, "Lovely Sammy, what do I owe you?" And I said, "Oh, Mick, you owe me nothing. You owe us nothing. That was an honour to have the pleasure to play for you and everybody, you know." And he went, "Oh, lovely, lovely." And my drummer's face went turned like a tomato. And lucky he was standing with me, because when I went into the dressing room, the other three guys were standing there waiting. They were all into the money. They weren't really into the music. And they said, "How much are we getting?" And Hank said to him, "You won't believe what Sammy just did. He just said to Mick that we've done the gig for nothing. It was a gift." And they blew up. I went through a trip with them. But anyway, it kept me in good stead with them, the Stones. I finished up by... I travelled with them and worked as a personal assistant to Keith on 2 tours and became part of the family, you could say, in those years. Very close with them all.
Now, what aspiring musician hasn't thought at least once about what it might be like to tour like the Rolling Stones? Well, Sammy saw it firsthand.
Everything's first class. It's all, you know, chauffeur-driven cars and the best of food that nobody ever eats. And there's chefs there on call 24 hours. You know, you can come out of your room and there'll be the table that goes for maybe 20, 30 feet with food all over it that never gets touched, you know. But the beautiful thing is, in the studio when they record, all of the guitars are all lined up in a row with beautiful lighting over them. And
though he travelled with them, ate with them and accompanied them into the studio, he never recorded with them.
Drums once, because they all come in at different times, David, you know. One will come in. As soon as one guy walks in, the engineer hits the record button. And it never goes. goes off. As soon as the first guy walks in, say, pardon me, it'll always be Bill Wyman. He'd come first, and then they'd hit the button, and Bill was just sitting there playing, and I thought, I'll just sit on the kit, the drums, and play, and I was just about to, and Charlie Watts walked in, he went, no, don't do that. Yeah, no, I never played on anything with him. But I played on plenty of laughs with him, that's for sure.
That's Little Sammy and a track called Coming On Strong. And it's the B-side of a song called Rock and Roll Is Back Again. And it was this record that really got his career as a hitmaker in France up and running. Now, the story of that first hit involves a producer named Jacques Morelli.
It's a name which makes me want to vomit, excuse my French.
And one day, while Sammy was looking for some new guitar strings in Pigalle in Paris, he walked into the shop of Jacques Morelli.
He said, oh, you are American. I said, no, I'm Australian. He said, oh, what, you play guitar? And I said, yeah, just a little bit, but I'm getting a plane today and I've got to get some strings now. I'm in a bit of a hurry. I didn't want to talk. He seemed like a bit of an aggro kind of a guy. And he said, I am a producer. And I said, oh, really? Great. What do you produce? He went, I'm writing many hit songs. And I went, good, good. He said, would you like to listen to one? I said, I can't now, but I'll come back. He said, when you come back, I'll get you the strings. So I went down the road. I came back half an hour later, and he introduced me to another gun guy called Mark Foscolo. He said, come out the back, and they took me out to this little workshop, and they had a little AWA cassette recorder. And he said, this is one of the songs we want to record now, and we want someone to sing it and put lyrics on it. And they played me this unbelievable piece of crap. Excuse my French once again. And I said, oh, all right. He said, how much you want to sing this? And I just, the first thing that came into my head was, oh, I've got to get away from these two guys. They're unbelievable. I said, oh, well, look, I'm going back to London now. I'd have to have another plane ticket if I've got to stay, and the hotel accommodation, and $2,000 to record it, US. And they said, can you give us half an hour? Go have coffee and come back in half an hour. And I went, yeah, I'll come back. So I got out of there and I did a bit of shopping and I came back about an hour later and they said, we are very interested in doing it. And I went, right, really? And they said, yeah. So they got somebody to cancel my ticket. They drove me downtown, put me in a hotel, gave me that little AWA cassette player with that piece of crap on it, and $500 cash. And said, we'll pick you up in the morning. We'll be recording in the studio in the morning. And we'll pick you up at 7:30 and we'll go in. So away they went. And I didn't even listen to the tape. I went out that night and came back and was pretty out of it. And bang, bang on the door in the morning. And there he was, Jacques Morelli and Mark Foscolo. And they said, you ready? And I went, yeah, I'm ready. So we went down to the studio. And I said, let me hear the backing track. And when they played the backing track, it sounded quite good in the studio, but not what it was on the cassette, you know. So I thought, yeah, okay, so I ad-libbed the lyric. When it finished, they went, oh, very good, 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 good. And I ad-libbed the lyric and called it, just stopped at the drugstore. They gave me the money. I flew to London, and 2 days later they rang and they said, we must change the lyric. I said, well, I'm not coming back there. And they went, well, we must change it now. I said, you come over here and we'll record it and I'll get the proper engineers and proper musicians. So they flew over, they paid for everything, went into Trident Studios. I got some great musicians, Dave Mason and different people.
Really?
And recorded this song, and I changed the lyric of it again and just called it Rock and Roll Is Back Again. Sang a corny lyric on it, away it went. 3.5 to 4 weeks later, it charted number one in England in the summer of 1971. 72, I beg your pardon, and it sold 1.3 million in the 6 months. And I thought, here we go, I've made it. Here's my beloved mother and father back there and my family. I'm going to buy them a house. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that, you know. And I went to get my royalties down at SACEM, which is like APRA, and I handed my card in with my identity, and he handed me a check and all my dossier. And I said to my friend Ronnie Bird, who was a French singer, I didn't speak French then, I said, what does this say? And he took it and he went, you want the good news or the bad news? I said, what's the good news? He said, well, the good news is you've only got $16,000. I went, what? I couldn't believe it. And right at that moment, I'd realised I got ripped off. And what he did, Jacques Morelli, he recorded the song. They got a guy in the SACEM who took my documentation out and they put theirs in. And in my place, he signed his name as the author and got his mate to sign as the composer. And with all my money, he then flew to America and formulated The Village People. Rock and roll is back again, so gather
all your friends, we're gonna rock together. That's Rock and Roll is Back Again by Little Sammy, the first of eight hits that he had in Europe in the 70s.
Despite his bitter experience with Jacques Morelli, it didn't take Sammy long to make more records. Paris was full of creative talent, and Sammy soon teamed up with some great musicians, like Vangelis.
He and I were the best of mates. He came to a lot of my gigs, and then we hooked up, and we became real good mates, and used to knock around together. And I used to go back to his place. He had an organ, which in those days there was nothing like it, because he'd hit it, and every instrument you wanted had come out of it. It was like a one-man band, like a synthesizer that they later on produced. But this was a big B3 Hammond organ. And I'd go into his apartment. He had all his gold records there. He'd get on the organ, and I'd have my guitar there, and I'd have four strings on it, and we'd just play away. I've recorded stuff on cassette with him. And then he said, oh, well, we must do an album. I want to produce you. So we went in and we had a guy called George Masonberg, who is one of the greatest engineers in the world. He builds the consoles. He was with Earth, Wind and Fire. He was with anybody that's been anybody. He's the most respected engineer in the world. And Vangelis had him as his engineer to produce, to do my stuff. So I got eight or nine wonderful players together to do two of these songs of mine, and Vangelis arrived, and when he saw the musos in there, he called me outside. He said, what are they doing here? I said, they're going to play on two of the songs. He went, I told you, nobody's playing on them. I'm playing on them. Tell them to leave. He was So I was that embarrassed. I had to tell everybody to go, but they'd get paid, and I kept the violin player, a lady called Catherine Lara, who was a wonderful French violinist, singer, player. Vangelis had his roadies come in and set all his gear up, and then he jumped up on the organ and he started to play one of the songs, and all the musos were still there, and they went, well, there you go, that's why you don't need us. Listen to that, you know. He just produced it all by himself, you know, fantastic. And then he wanted to mix one of the songs, and he was in there mixing, and about 3 in the morning he said, look, I'm going home. I'll come back tomorrow and we'll finish it. And when he left, George Masonberg, who was the most polite, lovely guy, he said, hey, Sammy, do you mind if I have a mix on this? And I went, please. He sat down, and it's the only time in my life ever that we were all standing in a room and it was like the lights all went on at the same time and everyone went, oh, he got it right to the peak. It was unbelievable, the mix. It was like, it was a hit for sure. Vangelis came the next day and wiped it.
Really? So he was a bit of an egotist then?
Oh, very ego guy. Very ego. Very egotistical. But, yeah, so I had the pleasure of meeting a lot of those egotisticals.
One of the most successful songs he wrote while working with Vangelis was a track called J'ai envie de toi, which became a big hit in France for a singer called Jean-Pierre Lalonde. But it's the flip side of that single that we want to play. It's called Cuckoo. Everybody's singing. Cuckoo, 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 cuckoo. Up and down the Kangaroo. Cuckoo, cuckoo, cuckoo. She sings a song for you, my friend.
That's Little Sammy getting funky in 1974, a track of his called Cuckoo featuring Vangelis.
Sammy's success in Europe also led to a few small parts in movies, and he also worked on a few soundtracks.
I was in a thing called the Rex Gang. That was about a gang, a motorbike gang, and a rock and roll concert, and 6 months wasted time. But and then I did those westerns with Richard Bardo, Claudia Cardinale. I was an extra in that. I rode with Richard Bardo in that. They were two terrific people.
For someone like Sammy, who has had the opportunity to work with so many interesting characters and come across so many stars in his long and successful career, we thought it might be interesting to ask him who he thought were the best entertainers that he'd ever seen.
The greatest for me, and I became very close to him, was Jimi Hendrix, and I loved him, and he wasn't the greatest performer, I must say. Excuse me, just cutting you out for a minute, Jimmy. The greatest is Sammy Davis Jr. And, of course, little Michael, our man, who just passed on, Jackson. I mean, they're the entertainers. They could dance. They could do everything. Nobody was like Sammy Davis Jr. There'll never be another that could dance, impersonate, sing, do everything. He was fantastic. But as far as the rock world goes, for me, no one better than Jimi Hendrix. Well, I lived in Orwell Street in London, and upstairs was a guy called, I mentioned his name to you before, called Danny Secunda, and he had head, hands and feet, and he was a dear friend of mine, and Alan Douglas became Jimi Hendrix's last manager. He took over, and Jimmy used to come there and go upstairs, and we'd sit in the lounge room and sit around and do what rock and rollers did in those days. And just have a play, and that's how I got to meet him. And then I went to a few of the gigs and saw him playing at Scotch to St. James, and saw guys like Eric Clapton and Pete Townsend. I saw those guys with their mouths open while Hendrix was playing, because Hendrix, nobody in England did anything like that ever. He was just sensational.
That's the end of side two of this look at the music of Little Sammy Gahar. And there were heaps of really great stories that Sammy shared with us while we were making this show. If you've loved what you've heard and you want to hear more, then check out our Facebook page, where we've uploaded a few others, along with some images of some of the records that we've played in this program and in part one as well. We'll leave you now with something that Sammy contributed to the soundtrack of the film Legend of Frenchy King, the one that he worked on with Brigitte Bardot and Claudia Cardinale. Happy listening, and good luck with the digging.
Frenchy King that they sing of was king of the West. Frenchy King, Frenchy King.